listener production.
Crew, you are listening to episode 153 of the Howie Games Part B, featuring tennis player Tanasi Kokkinakis. Service, please. Well, skip forward, mate. I saw a post the other day that you were back in the 100 after 6 years, and yeah. I know, talking to Bianca, that you're a man that wants to look forward, not back. So yeah. I get that. So I don't want to dwell on this. But just so people have an understanding, 2015 undergoes show. So it summarised your 6 years, basically. Yeah. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. 15, undergoes shoulder surgery. 16, finishes year without ranking. 17, ends season after US Open. 18, suffers fractured kneecap. 19, suffers pulled pectoral muscle. 20, can't compete all year due to injury. 21, recovers fitness, wins challenger title. Then we'll get to 22.
Yeah.
Let's not go into injury, except explain to me, you've coming up, you've said how much work you're doing.
Yeah.
People are talking about you. You've got a ranking. You're on the way up. You're ranked in the top 100 as a kid.
Yeah.
And then you have 5-6 years of really difficult times.
Yeah.
How'd you get through it? What'd you learn?
It's tough. I had to learn a lot about myself. I learned about the people that are kind of the yes people that just kind of jump on when you're doing well and the people that are legit with you from whatever happens and don't care about your ranking. They just care about you as a person. So I learned a lot about that. It was tough. As I said, end of 2015, it was my first professional year on tour, sort of playing week in, week out, and I got to 69 in the world. And then, yeah, I ended up doing some gym stuff by myself and a few other issues, playing basketball that I probably shouldn't have. Just young people things. I was 19, so I was just
learning
trying to have
to
fun.
Be professional, you know?
Yeah.
I get you.
I'm not a finished product by any means. And then, it kind of didn't go so well for me. I had surgery. I had the opportunity to play in the Olympics the year after in 2016 in Rio. And I was in no way, shape or form ready to play, but I was tossing up whether all the physios were telling me not to go, like I'm not ready. But I didn't know if I'd ever get another shot at the Olympic Games. So I don't care if I go there and have to serve underarm. My shoulder was bothering me. I couldn't serve, but I'm like, I'm going, I'm playing. I'm just soaking it up for the experience. At least I can call myself an Olympian if I go. I ended up doing that. Tried to play out that year, ended up having a few more injuries. And then kind of, it's weird from not having too many from a young age. I had a few little in there, but when you're coming back after a long injury, all this other little stuff that comes in that you'd never really expect. And it was just so hard to get momentum the last sort of 4 or 5 years. I'd come back for a couple months, I'd play, I'd have a good win, and then something would set me back
again. Beat Federer.
Exactly, yeah. Something like that. I had a Raonic win, beat Zverev in Hopman Cup as well. So I had a few good wins, which would kind of, in my head, kind of tell me to keep going. But then I'd also have some shockers and some other games where I'm like, I don't feel like myself at all. So that was a tough part, wrestling back. But eventually my family was massive. My coach was big. And it was just kind of looking back on the moments where I'd have good success and good results and think, hang on, if I'm fit and can put it together, I can't do this forever. I might as well see what I can do with whatever time I have.
How'd you keep your love for the game when it was going against you?
Oh, I didn't.
Right.
I definitely lost it a few times.
So you got
times.
To the point where you're like, the tennis isn't no fun now.
Yeah, especially after the year 2016 where I only played the Olympics that year. That was my only event for the year. 2017, I came back. I won the doubles actually in my first tournament back in Brisbane.
Mm.
So I was like, all right, I'm good to keep going. And then I got injured in the last point of the doubles match with a serve. So I had to miss out Aussie Open. I was like, you're kidding. I ended up, tennis has a thing called the protected ranking. So
yes.
If you're injured for sort of 9 months or more, you can come back with your ranking that you had when you were injured. And you can get, if you're in the top 100, which I was, direct acceptance into these tournaments. I remember I played a lead-in event before French Open and I was just so bad. Like I had no idea. It was on clay. I felt like Bambi on ice. I had no idea what I was doing. I said to my coach, I was like, bawling my eyes out. I was like, look, I don't have it anymore. Like I'm not enjoying this at all. Like these are guys that I felt like I should be beating or should be better than. And I'm just not feeling myself on court. But I had 3 more guaranteed Grand Slams for the rest of the year. I was like, you know what? I'm not enjoying this at all, but I'm just going to pick up my money. It is what it is. I've earned it. I might as well take the money. And then if I hate it after this year, I'm going to play this year out. And if I'm done, I'm done. Like that's it for me. Like I hated it so much, to be honest. I was just not feeling myself. Ended up the next week playing Nishikori in French Open, who has like been a top 10 player for years and like really pushing him and having a really close match on barely any match practice or training. And then from then on, I'm like, hang on, I've still got a bit in me here. And then I pushed Del Potro in Wimbledon. And then I ended up making a final of my first ATP event later that year. So I'm like, there's a bit to work with here. I'll keep pushing and keep going.
So that's the physical side. What about the great thing about life now, Tanasi, is people are well and truly prepared and open, often talking about the mental state and how important that is. How did you deal with the mental side of the fact you couldn't do what you loved?
Yeah, it was really tough, especially when you feel like you're so limited in your abilities. It felt like this is what people know me for. It's been well documented. Like, there were a couple of years where I was struggling mentally, depression, big time. And it was just because I felt like it's easy to kind of go out and be in public when you're winning because everyone kind of loves you. Everything's going sweet. And then you're injured for a while. You're not having the results you want. You're a bit embarrassed to kind of show yourself in public.
And that headline becomes Kokkinakis, injury prone.
Yeah, exactly.
Which every athlete hates.
Yeah, and that's what you're known for, and especially me. It's taken a while, pretty much up until this year, to kind of turn the narrative a little bit on that. But yeah, it's weird because that's what you're known for. That's how people recognize you. That's what you're known for doing. So then you feel like you're not really worthy to kind of like be outside, or you feel, not go outside, but like be around a lot of people and kind of lap in the social experiences that kids my age should be doing.
Yes.
So that was the tricky part for me to kind of learn to deal with that a little bit. Yeah.
Enough of backward.
Yeah.
Let's go to current forward.
Let's do it.
Adelaide, you talked about your first ranking point.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you win your first title.
Yeah.
Which I would be fair to say you cried.
Yeah, you can say it.
I loved it.
I tried to avoid it, but there was a couple of tears potentially.
Mate, I loved it.
Thanks.
Semi-final the week before, and I've written it down. Arthur Ridenek, who I didn't know a great deal about. We don't need to. The thing is, three sets, you won.
Yeah.
She's been a big old journey from that 14-year-old in buddy Ipswich.
Yeah.
So what does it mean when your hard work pays off?
That was nuts. That's still, I know the Aussie Open, we'll talk about that later, I'm sure, but that week is the most important week of my career, for sure. Yeah, 100%.
Hometown.
To do it in Adelaide in front of friends and family. Everyone around me had a tough year. a lot of family had a rough year as well. But I played the semifinals and I was like, this is a great first week of the year. You know, you're not sure how you're going to come out. Hometown, a lot of pressure. Had a great tournament. And I remember I was getting less and less sleep each match just because there was a bit of hype building. I hadn't kind of played in that environment in a while. I remember the night before my match with Monfils, I didn't sleep a minute. I don't know why. I just couldn't sleep.
You're just too keyed up.
Yeah, my adrenaline was pumping because I was always playing night matches. So it's really hard to wind down for me after a night match. And then I was looking at my clock. I felt like I was asleep. I didn't want to take a sleeping pill because I feel like I'd be groggy the next day. And my adrenaline was just building. And then I was like, hang on, it's getting 3 a.m., 4 a.m. I'm like, shit, I'm awake. It's 5 a.m. Now it's getting light outside.
And now the stress is coming in.
Now I'm like, crap, I haven't slept at all. So I played Monfils. I had like 2 monsters before I played and a shot of coffee, just trying to something to get me going, some pre-workout.
So for all the kids out there that want to achieve 2 monsters and a shot of coffee.
No, I ended up losing that match, so don't do it.
And that one goes long. It's a shame it ends that way. But what a match we've had. 80 minutes, Monfils defeats Kokkinakis 7-5, 6-love to go through to the final of the Adelaide International.
And yeah, I was like stoked with that semi-final, but I sat down with my team. I was like, look, like I'm so burnt out after this week. I need to take a week off and refresh before Aussie Open.
So you were going to skip the next week?
Yeah, I was going to skip the next week.
I did not know this, Tanasi Kokkinakis.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was going to skip the next week and I was like, they're like, just sleep on it. It's in your hometown. Like I knew how hard I worked to play tour events again. I barely played one the year before. So I was like, whatever, I'll see how I go. Draw comes out. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it a crack. I play Benoit Paire. You never know what you're going to get with him. Obviously, a real talented player, but I won that. I'm like, all right, semi-finals. It's been a great week. I'm running into Cilic, who's playing unbelievable.
Yep.
Grand Slam champion. Like, could be it for me, but who cares? I'm going to go out there, have a crack. Go out there, play the best set of my life in the first set. And it ends up being a war. I end up being down a break in the third set, get it back.
With Kokkinakis with 4 match points.
Down another break, I think, get it back. Then I'm up 6-2 in the third set tie break. So I've got 4 match points.
Unbelievable scenes here in Adelaide.
I shit the bed completely.
He had match points, didn't he?
Yeah, he wins 5 points in a row, match point.
Oh, no.
And then I've gone ace. Then he wins 2 more points. So I had 1 match point. I didn't take it. Then he wins 2 more points. And then all of a sudden I've got a match point on his serve. And I just played like 3-1. And that was like one of my best wins ever. Found myself in a final and I'm just like, I got to take this. I have a set point in the first set of the final. I don't take it. I lose it. But for some reason, I'm still like internally pretty calm. I still have a fair bit of belief. The guy was playing unbelievable as well. I couldn't touch him on serve.
Well, it's delight for the Frenchman. Rinderknecht takes it on the tiebreaker. Kokkinakis will be disappointed with how that unfolded.
Something shifted. I'm down in the second set tiebreak. I end up playing an unbelievable second set tiebreak. Hadn't had a break point or match on him. Third set, I break him first game. And then, yeah, I could kind of sense the finish line. I played a great third set. Atmosphere was off the charts and may have shed a tear or two.
Kokkinakis conquers all in Adelaide. How fitting he wins his maiden title in his hometown. Extraordinary achievement for somebody so young to have been through so much.
And when you get to the finish line?
Yeah, just relief. When the final ball sailed over, I remember because I had 3 match points and he saved the first one with a winner. And I was like, it's all right. Hopefully he's feeling the nerves a little bit as well. I hit a good return, got into the point, and it was just relief and raw emotion, just how it happened in Adelaide, literally on the end where my friends and family were, like they were like 3 meters away from me. It was, yeah, best week of my life for sure.
The trophy to your champion, Thanasi Kokkinakis.
Were your folks there?
Yeah, folks were there. Brother, sister, cousins, uncle, everything.
So if you don't mind, and it's a private family moment, but what's the conversation between your mum and your dad? Like they're, and you, they're proud as punch, but they've seen what you've gone through.
Yeah.
And you've no doubt been driven all around the country by them to tennis tournaments at a ridiculous clock in the morning.
100%. Yeah, exactly. And just like I'm not super emotional, but then if I see my parents or family, if they shed a tear, then it's curtains for me. I'm done. Then I start.
That's good, mate.
Yeah, so that's what happened. I saw when they walked onto court. I remember I was trying to do my trophy presentation without trying to like shed a tear or anything like that. But yeah, when they came onto court and I saw my mum was actually not even crying, which was weird. I thought she would be, but it was my dad. And my dad like is a strong, like old school sort of blue collar dude. Then when I saw like the red in his eyes, like the crying in his eyes, I was like, fuck, I'm done here. So yeah, that got me going. But it was just, we didn't even have to say anything. It was just more just knowing the journey and going through, and when they've seen me at my lowest lows, and obviously now at my highest high, it kind of was a massive weight off my shoulders and made everything worth it for sure.
To my family, my coaches, friends, everyone here, what a ride it's been. You guys have seen me at my lowest lows and obviously now my highest high. It's been a serious journey. I'm hoping this is just the beginning and I'll worry about next week. But for now, man, I'm so happy. Thank you guys so much for being there.
Then we get to the Australian Open. We spoke earlier on about, and I said as a commentator that I love entertainment. people sit on different things. I enjoy tennis, but, and I'm sure you've had thousands of people communicate this to you in the last 6 months, I enjoy tennis, but I'm not going to sit there and watch a great deal of tennis.
Yeah.
But when, to be fair, when you play, when your mate Nick plays, and when you play together,
yeah,
I'm watching,
yeah,
because I'm enjoying the tennis, but I'm being entertained as well.
Yeah. Thanasi Kokkinakis and Nick Kyrgios.
And Thanasi these days, you know, I can watch Netflix, I can watch Foxtel, I can, yeah, you know, there's a million things I can do with my entertainment time. Yeah. So do, where do you sit on the entertainment side of things? Is it just the way you play? Do you think that it needs to be brought? Where do you sit on it? Because it was thoroughly entertaining. We'll get, and the congratulations for winning the thing.
Thank you.
But the way you won it,
yeah,
and the way you entertained people was brilliant, mate. It was absolutely bloody brilliant.
No, I appreciate that. Had a lot of people come up that see me at restaurants or on the streets say the same thing.
Yeah.
They're like, we never used to watch tennis like that.
How good's that? That,
yeah, you,
that
it's unreal.
That you're bringing a new audience to the game.
It is. Yeah, it is. And it's obviously the winning helps that, because if we had one entertaining match and then we lose, it's like, oh, you know,
yep,
what I mean? Like it's, but because me and Nick, we've played it in the past. Obviously, we've done okay in the juniors, but every time we've played together on, well, singles was always our first focus. And every time we've played together on Grand Slam stage or pro tournaments, we might win a round here or there, but then there's some good teams out there as well. So we lose, or
no
our
doubt,
focus isn't where it needs to be, or we're not taking it as seriously as we should. This year, we kind of both lost early in the singles for both different reasons. And then, yeah, we ended up playing and we won our first round, the second round, and we just like had a lot of energy. You know, Nick.
Guys, I'm just gonna let you talk. The crowd don't want to hear me. They want to hear you. Talk us through it.
Unreal scenes. You know, like when we were young playing on the 12s, we grew up in Melbourne Park, and to say that we did it together, semi-finals, and I'm not finished. I want to win this fucking thing, to be honest, bro.
He's charismatic. I have my moments where I try and bring that out, but I don't want to like rein him in as well or let him go too much, because then, you know, we've got to try and win the match as well. So it's tough, but I think because I've known him for so long, I kind of can find the line with that with him.
Where no one else can.
I think so. It's just because we've known each other for so long. And then, yeah, second round, we playing the number one in the world. These are known as the best team.
These are Croat boys that blew up?
Yeah, these are the Croats that blew up. These guys won Olympics last year, finished year-end number one, won all these tournaments. They were pretty much like unbeatable the last year. And we ended up winning that in straight sets and in front of that Kia Arena, and the crowd was nuts.
And I've done it. What a performance. Pure theatre. The crowd love it. And the Wimbledon champions are out. High quality tennis by Kokkinakis and Kyrgios.
There was a lot of Croats there, which is fine, whatever. They were going for them. We were getting sledged a bit. It's
yep,
cool. It's part of entertainment. But just looking on the crowd, you know, tennis traditionally is an older crowd, a little bit more proper. It felt like the oldest person in there was 35, like in a stadium. And there was people doing shooies on the side of the court. They were telling us to yell out grunting sex noises as we're playing. And we're just kind of lapping it up. We're doing whatever we can while trying to keep the focus, because I think we kind of knew what to expect, but our opponents didn't. So we were just kind of bringing the atmosphere, bringing the energy, and we were playing good tennis and firing it up. And yeah, it just everyone was like, you guys are going to win this thing. I was like, no, we're going to lose first. We're going to lose next round for sure. I was telling everyone.
What happened with the Croat boys? Was like there was meant to be a bit of aggro down in the change rooms? Was
that
it?
Yeah, there was a bit.
A little bit of breaking news. I want you to have a look at this. This was a tweet put out by Nick Kyrgios. Now, drama and Nick never too far apart. He says, just letting you know, after yesterday's chop fest in doubles, my opponent's coach and trainer proceeded to threaten to fight in the player's gym. Tennis is a soft, soft sport. And he tags in his doubles partner, Thanasi Kokkinakis, all because I moved and hit them with a tennis ball. What do you make of that, Sam?
There was this one thing.
But, before you explain it, again, I don't know if you've seen Drive to Survive on Netflix.
It's good. It's happening
in tennis. And I think they're doing a tennis
one.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I look forward to seeing that, because in that entertainment arc, again, if I'm hearing, oh, there's been a bit of aggro between such and such,
you
and such and such, I want to watch him play.
100%.
I want to watch him play.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think that's where tennis needs to get better. And I
no
think
doubt.
Hopefully we help that a little bit.
So what happened?
So what happened was, it happened a little bit during the match, but obviously people are going to be salty when you lose. Or if you beat him, I don't know, for lack of a better term.
But... No, I like salty. My kid's used salty.
Oh, perfect. So there was this one point where I watched and Nick had a short forehand and he hit it and he hit the guy, which is fine. Like that happens in tennis doubles. All this time, especially in doubles. And Nick apologized. He's like, sorry, sorry, sorry. And I was like, oh, it's very respectable. It's nice of Nick to do. So I turn my back to go get the balls because I'm serving. And then I didn't see, but they show it on the replay. Then he turns to the Croatians and starts flapping his tongue out at them, which I didn't see. So maybe that irked him a little bit.
Possibly.
Yeah. But whatever. It's kind of a bit of fun. It didn't do it like at their face or anything. So it was kind of fine. And then Nick hit a second serve one time and like it was an ace on a big point. And he did like a big ball celebration, meaning like it was a clutch serve. Anyway, we end up winning the match, whatever. I'm like, Nick, let's go to the gym. You know, we're professionals. Let's go stretch and warm down. Probably the first time we've ever done that after a doubles match, by the way. We get in there and I'm the first through the door and the Croatian's fitness trainer has a foam roller and he's just smashing it up against a pole, like heaps hard. I was like, holy fuck. Like I thought he was kind of joking. And I was like, wait, I like, hit Nick. I was like, wait, dude, he's going to lay into his players. Watch this. Anyway, turns around and just beelines for us. I'm like, oh shit, what's going on here? And he had these big veneers on as well. So it's just, I don't know.
And his chompers.
Yeah, he had big chompers. So, and he was like sweating and like, saliva was like coming and spitting out. And he's like, you think you have big balls now? And I was like, who, me or Nick? Like, which one's got big balls? I was like, oh no, this is outrageous. And he kept coming. He got closer and closer. He's like, no, show us your big balls. We do it outside. Show us your big balls. I was like, oh God, what's going on here? He's like, I'm like, this isn't UFC. Like, what are we watching here? Anyway, he gets up pretty close to Nick and I kind of get in the middle because I actually knew this guy before and we had a fine relationship. So I was just like, mate, what are we doing? You guys lost. I understand there's some tension there, whatever. And then Nick's like, the only thing you'll be flying, you'll be on your flight to Croatia on a Boeing 747. So then that escalated it a little bit. But whatever, it was nothing. It was a bit of fun though to watch. And the first thing I did is I tried to go into Craig Tiley, the CEO's office, and I was like, mate, we need the footage of that. That's hilarious. Like somehow get me footage of what happened out there. But yeah, they got a bit close, got a little pushy, but
were
nothing.
The Netflix cameras there?
I wish they were. Oh. I know. I wish they were.
Back to Tanasi in a moment. One of the toughest conversations I've ever had on this podcast was with another tennis player, Jelena Dokic, a strong, strong, strong woman.
Very often I would go, you know, out there on the court, even later when my ranking dropped, maybe I was 100 in the world, but people don't realize I was going out there with all of these problems and winning, you know, a match maybe on the challenger level was such a big accomplishment. And it's hard to explain that to people on, you know, such an individual sport and a tough tour like that. But for me, those were, you know, accomplishments because there was so much going on still in my private life that I, again, talk about and everything that he was putting me through. I mean, I'm not sure which player in the world, if ever, has had to have security guards to protect them against their father, you know, threatening to come and kill everybody. So I think that in itself, going out on the court is an accomplishment.
That's Jelena Dokic on episode 44 of the show. Back to Tanasi. You win the tournament. Again, congratulations. It's brilliant. The interviews afterwards are brilliant. You know, I saw you next day celebrating with your family, having dinner and stuff. It's brilliant. But let's move on from that, if we can. You've been playing recently. So since then you've been to the States.
Yeah.
Playing in
Miami and LA, yep.
And did really well.
Yeah,
really well. Chat with me for 10 minutes about life on tour and what it's like, and hotels, and courtesy cars, and food, and fitness, and paychecks.
Yeah,
how does it all work?
Yep.
Because all we see is 2 hours on court.
Yeah, yeah.
I spend a lot of time traveling with my job.
Yeah.
And a hotel's a hotel at the end of the day, and room service is room service. But I'm fascinated what it's like on the ATP tour for a bloke that's ranked 90th in the world.
Yeah. Well, what's crazy is the difference you can make when you're ranked 90 and ranked like 130.
Right.
So there's only like 40 ranking spots difference, but just solidifying yourself in the top 100 means you're guaranteed into every Grand Slam.
Yep.
And that's minimum probably over 400k there for the year, US.
Right. So just to get first rounds.
Just to be
so
in
you
there.
Get rolled in the first round in all four. Yeah. Okay.
And being in there also gets you direct entry into most other tournaments as well. Yep. So there's a lot more than just that, which is massive. But if you're so like the first round of being in top 100 for a Grand Slam main draw is about 100k, give or take. And then if you're first round qualifying, so anywhere from sort of about 105 or 106, if you're outside that, just being in a Grand Slam qualifying, you're probably maybe 17, 18K.
So that's a difference in massive, five ranking spots.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
So this is the top stuff I want to know that I don't know, that we don't know because we don't live it.
So for me, as I said, like, I mean, you can look this up, all this stuff's on the internet, but like, for me, my most important week of my career, singles-wise, was Adelaide. And I made, what was it, probably around 60, 70, 70K for Adelaide. It's just a good week's work. You're not complaining with that.
Absolutely.
You win a doubles tournament, a Grand Slam, you pocket, it was like 380 or 390K.
Right.
So it's like, hang on, now like we're talking. But Adelaide was a lot harder than what the doubles was. Now, I'm not saying the doubles were going to just roll through because there's a lot of good players. But for me, like the singles was so important. That's the weird thing. It's kind of where you do well and where you make your money. Last year, I was playing a lot on the Challenger Tour trying to build my ranking up. You'd play five matches in a week and beat quality opposition and you'd make sort of 7,000-8,000 at best.
What's a week costing you?
A lot. A lot of times more than that as well because you're paying... Okay, if you make 7,000 in the week, you probably make a couple grand.
Okay.
I reckon it kind of could cost you around sort of three.
And what's that? Your flights, your hotels?
Flights, your hotel. That's like, not even including... Oh, no, it's probably more. I didn't even include my salary for my coaches and
right,
and
so who have you got with you?
I always have one person with me, whether it's my fitness trainer or my coach.
Okay.
Honestly, if you're playing on the Challenger Tour, you're probably losing money per week. Unless you win the tournament and you probably break even.
So give me what do you reckon? B's here as well. She's probably better on this. What do we generally think currently touring the world playing tennis you need break even? We sort of talking...
I reckon...
400?
No, less. Oh, it depends. A lot depends who you bring with you on the road as well.
So with a minimal entourage.
Yeah. So if you...
You haven't got Vinny Chase and his crew out the back
there. I don't have Vinny Chase and the entourage right there. I reckon you'd be safe around 200.
Break even.
Yeah.
Break even.
Yeah.
So not losing money.
Yeah. But if you go like in real try and if you go try and just do it all yourself and don't bring a coach, I reckon sort of 70, 80.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Really.
It is.
People don't
isn't
realize.
It
like,
is.
Like, oh, you're playing professional tour, you're like, you're making shitloads.
Well,
and
people, you look at prize money, you think, wow, there's a bloke's coined up, but not necessarily the case. Yeah. Locker room before you go out there. The other bloke's in there, yeah?
Yep.
This strikes me as bizarre because I can't think of many other sports.
People don't get it. Yeah,
people are separated by change rooms in most other sports.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, if you're playing old mate X, do you have a chat with him beforehand or do you stay away from him? How does that work?
It just depends on the person. Like, I've played a lot of my mates and a lot of people I'm kind of friendly with and I'm pretty easygoing. Like, I'm not.
Very.
Yeah. I'm not looking at you, I'm not talking to you, whatever. Like,
does happen.
Yeah. That happens heaps. Depends. You got to kind of read the person a little bit. Like sometimes I like to kind of talk a bit of shit, just like banter, nothing.
Yep.
Nothing about the match, but it's just how I am. I'm easygoing. If people don't want to partake in that, I'll just move on. But like sometimes I'll just talk about rubbish or see something on TV and talk about it with them or talk about basketball or whatever, people that I'm around. But there's other people that would go completely opposite way. Like Nadal obviously would be real serious and real focused. Yeah.
Federer's
a bit more relaxed. Murray's pretty easygoing after a match, but before he's like real locked in. And Djokovic kind of is in his own world a little bit. So I kind of let that go. But just everyone's different. But yeah, it is pretty weird when you explain to other athletes that you're in the same locker room.
I've always thought that. Another question for you on this.
Yeah.
You're on the other side of the world. You've got maybe one person with you. You're doing everything you can. You're coming back from injuries. This is you or anyone now. You play what you would describe, say, as a crap game. You get rolled. You thought you would have won. It's cost you ranking points. Could cost you this entry to here.
Yeah.
How do you go with life then back in your hotel room by yourself?
Oh, it sucks.
Does it?
It fucking sucks. Yeah, it's rough.
That's when it's such an isolated sport.
A lot of time by yourself. And that's where it feels like a lonely place out there. Especially most of the time I'm roomed by myself. Sometimes room with the coach, whatever. Just because I've known my coach for a while. But yeah, that's the tough part. You're by yourself and you're just like, you kind of want to do things to distract you, but also you keep replaying it over and over in your mind, especially if you've had chances or opportunities. And on the main tour this year, it's been a lot better. You can take the losses. You're playing against higher ranked players, more money. It's easier to take. It's whatever. But last year, especially playing on the Challenger Tour, and I was so hungry to get my ranking back up to the top 100, losing to guys sometimes you feel like you should beat, that's when it really starts playing on you. Like, do I have it? A lot of doubts, a lot of self-thought.
So how do you get through that?
Just got to train. Just got to train and try and keep a positive mindset. And
You can train the body, but how do you train the mind to not go back into the hotel room and sit there and dwell?
I think it's impossible not to dwell a little bit. You try and distract yourself with other ways. Hopefully you've got some mates at the tournament or some people that you... I think having people you get along with and that can travel with, that you're comfortable with, is massive, especially on the road. Sometimes that's more important than having a coach there, just so you can be in a good headspace after a loss like that. The good thing and bad thing with tennis is you can have a good week and have no time to celebrate because you've got to play again. Then you lose the next week and you all of a sudden feel like you're the shittest player ever. But with tennis, you can have heaps of bad weeks. You hit the lottery on one week and you play unbelievable and it's like, hang on, I'm back.
Yeah.
Like, I'm ready. And that's a good thing. And like track and field athletes or swimmers with the Olympics and that, I know they have other events, but that's the be-all and end-all for them. They train 4 years, put in a shocking performance. Got another 4 years to that. The good thing with tennis is we got a week after week. So that's one of the positive things. You can be average for 90% of the year. Last 2 weeks of the year, you hit form and you play well. It's like, hang on, he's back. He's found his form again. But that's just sport, I think. It's all, what have you done for me lately?
So as a 26-year-old, you've had a pretty significant journey. You were there. You were down.
Yeah.
And you're on the way up again, which is fantastic. Like dreams, aspirations, goals, or have you met them all because you're just back out on court, fit and healthy?
Yeah, it's weird. Like people have asked me that, like, what are your goals now? Surely you're hungry for more, and I am, but it's weird. As I said, when I was younger, I don't want to be complacent, but when I was younger, you have all these dreams. You're like, I want to win Davis Cup, want to be number one in the world, want to win Grand Slams. You realize that's fucking hard to do.
Yes.
Like there's so many players doing that and just the journey, and that's what makes the big three or the top of the game guys we have now so incredible to do it week after week. But for me, winning Adelaide was such a massive, massive goal. And it's not something I expected at all. I was like, hopefully I can play well in front of the crowd and not embarrass myself. That was such a weight lifted on my shoulders. And then to go out and win a Grand Slam with one of my best mates the week after that, it's like, I don't know. Admittedly, there was a bit of a lull after the January. I was just like, what now for me? Like, I know I can build my ranking or try and win better tournaments, but I won a massive tournament in my hometown. I won a Grand Slam in Australia with one of my mates. I'm like, shit, like, I don't know. Like, if my tennis career ended now, I'd be, obviously there's some more things I'd like to do, or I try to improve and do better at some Grand Slams, but I would be okay. And I wouldn't have felt like that before the January started. So that's where I'm at now. Now I'm just trying to see how well I can do, play out the rest of my career and see what I can get to. But I'm not going to go traveling sort of tournament to tournament, week in, week out, just try and get my ranking a little bit higher. I want to make sure I'm enjoying my tennis, being out there and having fun and trying to get home when I can. I love coming home. I did last year 9 months straight on the road playing some shitty tournaments, not going to lie, and I just hated tennis after last year. And then January, like I had, kind of reminds you why you play and that sort of feeling, which you don't really get. That's the thing. I always thought about stopping, but I'm like, I wouldn't get that thrill and that adrenaline if I did stop.
Choose to answer this yes or no. You don't have to answer this one, just from what you said. And I love that answer. Of these places you've been, where's the dodgiest tournament you've rolled up to?
Fuck. That's a good question.
Let's hope you don't get back on the Challenger Tour and they hear this answer.
Exactly. I mean, when I was younger, I played in New Delhi.
Right.
But New Delhi's weird because there are some really nice spots and some absolute...
Yes, that's India.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know. There you go. So that's up there, but also nice. Where have I played it? Absolute shocker. Oh, just like a couple small towns in Romania and just... It just sucks sometimes. I don't want to throw any Romania because Bucharest is nice.
No,
hey?
But
there's just some spots where you're just like, mate, there's got to be more to it than this.
Well,
like,
you're a long
I'm
way
like,
from
I'm going home.
There.
I'm doing a 9-to-5. This sucks.
Last question for you. We are blessed. And it's been I've really enjoyed chatting with you. I'm glad we could do it in person. I'm glad to see a fella with a big smile on your face, which is brilliant. We have a lot of kids listening, which we're lucky. We always finish this way. For those kids that want to become tennis players or scientists, maybe, or mathematicians, or the best builder in Australia. From what you've learnt, and you've had a pretty good journey up and down as a 26-year-old, what advice would you give them?
And you have to enjoy what you're doing. And I've been guilty of not enjoying it sometimes. It's weird. We're so results-based. Everything, like, you enjoy it when you win, you hate it when you lose. Trying to enjoy the journey is the biggest thing. It's cliche. It's hard to do for sure, but it's weird. As I said, when you're younger and you're aspiring, it goes from this is just having fun and you do it because you like it and you enjoy it. And then somewhere along the line, it turns into a job and you feel like you have to do it as opposed to this is what you want to do. So that's the tricky line. You have to enjoy it. And then if you realize that's what you want to do, you have to commit to it. And you actually genuinely have to put in the work. You can get to a certain point without it, but if you want to kind of get through that barrier and push for a few more goals, then you genuinely have to work hard. And the other thing is to kind of be patient with it. It's not going to happen overnight.
I love it, mate. Yeah. I'm going to say, I love the earring. I don't know if I could pull it off. Thanks.
You would have in your youth.
Well, yeah.
In your youth,
I don't
you
know.
Would have
I look at it and thinking, shit, could I pull that off? And I'm thinking, probably not, but I love it.
In your youth.
Mate, I love just the vibrancy you bring to sport. Thanks for giving us a thrill over the summer. Hope everything goes well in the upcoming year and that you have a few more wins and enjoy your mates and your family and stay safe and stay healthy. Good on you, mate.
Appreciate it, mate. Thank you.
Well done.
Good man.
Good guy is Tanasi. Real good dude. Had quite an impact on Dars and I. Whilst you're listening to this, Tanasi is most likely at a tennis tournament somewhere around the world, trying to improve, trying to have fun, and trying to keep his tennis dream alive. Good luck to him. Thanks to Tanasi for his time, to Bianca Giannone for making it all happen. Thank you, B. And to Dars for rolling it out in his typical stress-free manner. Hope you have a great day from here on in, wherever you're listening. Thanks for tuning in. Until next Thursday with Lisa Curry. Peace and love.
And we can do it if we try, try, try. If we try, try, try. If we try, try, try.
Listener.